Welcome to the IPX True North podcast, where we connect people, processes, and tools.
Well, Nate, welcome back. I look forward to the second part of the series. For our podcast audience that listened last time, you know we're right now talking about the ecosystem evolution. And within this large series, we're really focused on organizational change management right now. For our new listeners, please take the time to listen to the first part of the OCM series. But with that, I just want to say, Nate, welcome back. Appreciate you taking the time. I look forward to today.
Yeah, thanks for having me back again, Joe. I'm really looking forward to this as we continue to explore the organizational change management and then the workforce development issues that go along with it. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting started again.
All right, let's do this. For me, you know, I've never done this before, but I think I don't know if it's allowed. And I think most of these people probably, might blush a little bit, but hey, who cares? and if I'm not allowed to do it, we can edit it out, right? So as a young individual, I started as an apprentice and worked my way through as I was going to college. I had some great directors. I really did. I had some great managers. I had some piss poor ones as well, and I won't name them. So no one worry on my side of the house. I'm not going to do that. But they really went out of their way. And, I'm trying to, you really touched on something there and bringing up the model-based definition and the model-based enterprise, the model-based ecosystem, and using that as kind of a way to make it more digestible in my daily life. And I had some directors that did that during my time. You know, I had, when I first started, Delbert Anderson, I think he's at FCA now, if he's not, retired somewhere with his toes in the sand. You know, he used, we were going through a great process and system transformation initiative across probably 70, 75 sites globally. He used that, and decided I was going to travel the globe, and I was going to learn. I was just going to throw my feet into the fire, so to speak, and learn how to behave globally, right? It's something I didn't learn in university, and how to interact and how to read a room. I had Janine Henning, very similar, taught me how to really focus in on an individual and how to assess a situation before speaking. I had Kevin Gentry, who taught me how to show empathy as a director, right? Again, something that wasn't really taught to me in university. I don't think it was taught at all. I don't think the word empathy was ever used until, the recession of 2009. And I had many more. I had Greg Smith at Rolls-Royce, had a great peer, Chris Ball, Rolls-Royce. All these people I've tried to learn, how to bring humor, how to bring grace, and also humbleness. And, and I'm still trying to get better, but I do think the director level, that manager level, it's a very, very important role. And if you don't, as a company, invest in that level, none of your efforts, none of your mission statements or your visions, none of the training, it's really not going to mean anything to the workforce, right? To that everyday individual that's used to hearing that kind of token statement or superficial, this is who we are, this is who we're going to be. And at the end of the day, they're like, this is not how it is on the line. But I do think, from my perspective, and I definitely want to get yours, that mid-level, that director level, man, that's a gold mine of opportunity there if we really invest, because they're our core. When it comes to our company, regardless of the size, they're that core level. And if we don't get that right, man, we're really missing the mark. So, watch your, perspective on this kind of when it comes to OCM. We've talked about the leadership. Now we're really getting into, okay, people are going to start having to roll up their sleeves and preaching this, so to speak, to the workforce.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's where, so maybe I use a little bit of a training and development metaphor. So in a former life, I did corporate training in the software industry, CAD, PDM, those kinds of tools. And obviously here at the university over the years, I've developed classes and, you know, lessons for the classes and so on and so forth. But, you know, one of the things about organizational change management is it's, you know, it's almost like with any other topic, it's hard for anyone to know everything about whatever the topic is, right? Because people have varying degrees of knowledge. And so, you know, unless you're learning about something for, you know, your own intrinsic reasons, I think when you talk about organizational change management, you talk about workforce development, you talk about how this affects an organization, I think one of the things that needs to happen, not only from a leadership perspective, but from a director and sort of mid-level management perspective, is you got to decide who needs to know what and when do they need to know it. And it's there's a process that we go through when we design instruction for people, which is you start asking in sort of a task-oriented mindset is, okay, what does someone need to know in order to do this task, whatever it has to be, right? I remember I had a professor once in a class that I was taking. He said, what's one of the more common things someone might do every day? And people would raise their hand. We'd say things like, all right, tie your shoes, you know, make a sandwich, drive a car, write a check. That was back when people still wrote checks. You know, that sort of stuff. And I think for most of us right now, you know, yeah, those are all common things we would do. A lot of times we do it without even thinking about it, especially things like tying your shoes, making a sandwich, you know, that sort of stuff. But
I have to interrupt you, Nate, because I just want to, this is where I'm going to have to disagree with you. I put a lot of thought into making a sandwich because the making okay, a good.
Fair enough. But imagine, you know, if you've ever tried to explain to anyone how to tie your shoes, right? So what do you need to know in order to tie your shoes? And so what do you need to know in order to, you know, operate this piece of machinery in your factory? Or what do you need to know in order to use this piece of software? What do you need to know in order to interact with this sort of supplier, right? And so you start breaking these things down into these levels of tasks and what the preceding knowledge is and what the outcome is, and all the way until you can't break it down any farther. And you say, okay, all these things that are on this bottom row, these are our entry level behaviors that are going to interact with this bottom row. And then we're going to build from there. And so you end up in this, and you've probably heard me say this before, is you end up in this structure of awareness, literacy, competency, and mastery. Not everyone has to be a master of whatever the topic is, right? A lot of people in an organization can simply just get by with being aware that there is a topic and some of its notional structure, right? Literacy means we, you know, understand the basics, if you will. Competency meaning, you know, I can apply that. And you know, mastery often having to do with making decisions, open-ended decisions, based on judgment and recollection of the topic. And so it's a... I promise I'm coming back to this, to your question, but my point is, when it comes to that director level or mid-level management, as it relates to organizational change management, this is where an organization, especially the upper leader, at times is going to have to start at least maybe not making the decision solely, but giving thought and giving guidance on, all right, who is it? Who needs to know what and when? How many of our people need to simply have awareness? How many people need to have literacy? How many people truly have to have competency in this? And then how many people really need to be masters of this particular topic? You know, and a lot of organizations have, you know, super users, or they have subject matter experts, or they have, you know, somebody, or maybe a small group of somebodies who have been designated as the go-to person. But from a change management perspective and that mid-level operating group of people, you need to figure out who is going to be in each one of those proportional levels of knowledge about organizational change management? Who's going to be at those proportional levels of implementation? Who's going to be at those proportional levels of evaluation of whether or not we're actually getting there, you know, in our OCM or not?
Yeah. And I, you know, for me, and I don't know if you're ready to transition, but this is a, it's an, it goes back to accountability, and I'm getting ready to transition into, again, the word I'm going to use over and over, accountability, throughout this series. People are going to get tired of hearing it. But so now we're talking about that transition from leadership to the director. And now we're getting into the workforce. We're getting into the individual. And I'll be honest with you, Nate, over the last few days, this one's hit me a bit harder. As you know, I do put a lot into these discussions. I take them to heart. It's not trivial for me, but this one's, it's been bothering me because you also know I don't hold back. I do my best to be tactful. I fail at that all the time. And I know I failed as a leader. I have failed as a manager, but I've also had great successes. And I also know that and I'm going to circle back a little bit, you know, when you assume the title of being an executive or a leader, you get kind of, the microscope is on you. Everything you say, everything you do, and all of your actions, to a level that sometimes can be a bit daunting. But that's happened to me as an individual, in a good way. But one thing that's been bothering me, and you don't hear a lot of people talking about this anymore, is, you know, it's my perspective, individuals need to hold themselves accountable as well. And that, you know, that's how you perform, the level of work, you know, if you commit to a job or a task. You know, I've heard so many examples over the last couple of weeks just talking about this and kind of keeping my ears open, the one good ear that does work, of these kind of stories across all industry. You know, you've got skilled trades workers, you know, that are on their social media accounts on top of a roof. You've got, you know, people asking for three breaks upon the hour. And I think there's some things there as individuals, you know, and I don't know how many individuals we're going to get that find themselves in this scenario, but there's a little bit there that, you know, you have to hold yourself as an accountable resource to your company. And I think some of the things we've gotten carried away with working virtual in many ways is our phones and the vast array of social interaction and things that could ping us throughout the day. And, you know, I've had the discussion with people in the past, they say, well, I only get 10 or 15 of those a day, but yeah, but that's you taking the time to not only interact, but then your thought process is broken, but it's also a danger. So I don't know where I'm going to go with this and where I'm trying to lead you. And I apologize, but this one's an important one to me because I think we need to talk about upskilling at the individual level. We need to talk about the needs for the individual coming out of higher ed or skills trade into industry or in their respective career. But I also really do want to talk about the needs of the individual to be accountable and to be and what they need to do to be a good employee. And before we go there, I'm going to stop on this one last topic or transition before I formally ask you to talk. OCM, you know, you hear a lot of people, you see a lot of offerings of become a great leader. Not everyone wants to be a leader. Not everyone wants to be a manager. Some, and you touched on it, just want to be a good employee. They just want to be aware. They want to do their job and they want to go home. And that's perfect. And so what I want to talk about at this level, at the workforce, that individual level, from your perspective, where do you see the trend or where do you see the need in higher ed and skills trade? Where do you see a need for continuing education in the workforce and or the transition of onboarding into the workforce? And then the third element in this one, Nate, is, and as you've heard me say, what elements should the individual hold themselves accountable to in order to be a good employee? Sorry, I was long-winded, but it's all yours, man.
Gosh, there's a lot to unpack there. So let me try it this way. To some degree, I think you have to stop and think about maybe what do you as an individual, what do we as a profession, what do we as a larger society expect from education or academia in general? I'll just say that. It could be, you know, the K through 12 system. It could be community college system. It could be vocational training system. It could be university system. You know, we've evolved, I think, pretty rapidly as a country in our movement away from, in our movement from education or going to school in general, right? Because for a long time, particularly in the early years of our country, and you know, you can even trace that back some to the other places in the world, Europe, Asia, so on and so forth, where citizens of the U.S. have come from. But in almost any society, you can see where not everyone initially went to school. You know, it was only the wealthy, or it was only the aristocracy, or it was only the clergy, or, you know, that sort of thing, right? There was definitely a subdivision socially, societally, in terms of who is educated and who's not. And again, I promise I'm going to get back to your point, but I think some of this actually speaks to where we are today, and in that, we as a society have moved from, you know, education as a source of enlightenment and simply how to be a good human to train me for work. And, you know, there are all kinds of social, governmental, political things that have contributed to that transition. Where, you know, in the university where I am, you know, we have industry advisory councils, most of the departments. Now that doesn't necessarily mean like manufacturing industry. It could be any kind of an industry that's relevant to whatever that curriculum is. But the point is these people are often used as advisors and you kind of bounce ideas off of them. They interact with you and your students, your faculty, so on, and give advice basically. You know, you can see it in the elementary school, middle school, high school space where, you know, community foundations and industry trade associations are giving feedback to, you know, state legislators and to local school boards and workforce development boards and so on about what they need for their employees, right? But somewhere along the line in our history, the idea of going to school became equated with then going into some kind of a job. You can argue whether that is the right approach or not, because historically there have been other approaches. You know, the master apprentice model, for example, is one that's been used throughout the centuries. The reason I'm talking about this is that I think there are a few different elements that are sort of part and parcel to your question, but I think it's one of the items for sort of the how did we get here part of answering your question is, and what should academia be doing now, especially as it relates to the workforce needs of kind of the general rank and file employee. I think a lot of it goes back to understanding how we got here in terms of this idea that somehow going to school was supposed to prepare you for a job. And I'm not arguing whether that's good or bad, because we could be here for days arguing whether that's good or bad. But my point is the transition happened. And so today we're in this environment where we have conversations like, you know, I'm, you know, Nate Hartman Incorporated, and I'm not getting this sort of skills and abilities in my workforce. And okay, you know, high school over here, I need you to go do this, right? And university over here or community college over here, I need you to go do this. Well, is that what gets us the best kind of employees? Is that what gets us the right kind of organizational structure and ultimately one that can go, that can actually survive the process of organizational change management rather than, you know, you've seen as many of these as I have probably where an organization tries to go through OCM and they stagnate and they flail around and they're just in this cesspool of not knowing what to do. And all of a sudden somebody kind of takes a step back and go, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, maybe, but maybe we shouldn't have done that. And so I think one of the things we've got to think about with respect to organizational structures and, you know, the sort of the mechanical and the cultural and the educational piece of it is, I believe that while certainly we want our, you know, school types of institutions, right? Elementary, middle, high school, you know, community college, university, whatever, we want them to do their part. But I really think there needs to be a learning or educational, whatever, training, whatever you want to call it, part to organizations, that it can't just be, oh, well, that's the local high school's job to do that. No, it really isn't. We're in this together in the sense that, you know, schools, for better or for worse, even universities, you know, we're not funded and we're not supported and we are not, frankly, structured or enabled or equipped or what have you to do everything that sort of an industrial or sort of product or services delivering kind of organization would want us to do. So I really think companies need to sort of look inward on themselves again and say, what role in this do we play? What role in the, or what can we do as a role in this where, all right, we can take the raw materials, if you will, these fresh graduates, and work with them and build upon that. And that's something that I think is sometimes missing in the conversation, is that I think companies into the future can't be as successful as they could be if they're just going to say and go, okay, we, you know, we're washing our hands of that. We want the schools to give us this kind of a profile and we're just going to take them and go with them. Well, it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And that's a great point. And you know, that partnership or that conjoining between industry and skilled trades and or academia, higher ed, it's an important one, you know. And as much as we preach accountability across all these elements, I do think there's a partnership element to this that really needs to be dissected. And you know, before we close, you know, I did want to kind of bookend some of this and wrap up, you know, where you're at on the individual side, you know, just from what we've already talked about. This is big stuff. And like you said, there's a lot here to unpack. There's a lot here to dissect and to discuss. And, you know, for me as an individual, I'm going to name drop two more people and apologize to them in advance. They don't have permission for any of this. Don't care. As an individual, and I think this applies to higher ed. I think this applies to industry. But as individuals, we also have to be able to accept constructive feedback and criticism in some manners as we're learning, as we're transitioning through a career, especially in the early stages. You know, I know right out of university and having an apprenticeship, I thought I knew everything about the company I was already at, and man, I was wrong. You know, and what I will say is I had two just dynamic, just powerhouse executives and upper leadership that really gave me, as I, you know, as all companies identify their high potentials in different manners, but I was identified and I was given opportunity from my directors to interface with these leaders. But I had two that stick out when I was young, Rhonda Heitens and Debbie Pappas. And I tell you what, they were relentless on making sure when I presented a thought, when I presented a summary or I chaired a meeting, that I did it to a level that they were expecting. And they had no problem redlining a presentation. They had no problem with telling me not to do that again, to do this, to elevate my game. And I will say in the beginning, there was a little bit of, you know, probably some undertones. As you could imagine, Nate, I think you knew me when I was a little younger. That hard-headedness there, like, this is... I just saw what was presented before me. I know what I did is better than that. I know what's coming after me. I know what I just did is going to be better than that. But what I will say is they were very consistent. And I think that's one thing I want to, that's a word that I want to be part of OCM from a leadership mid-level and into an individual. We need to be consistent with our message. We need to be consistent with our approach, with our processes. And our actions, and we're going to miss the mark here or there, but I do want to use that word because it touches on this next level and that gap. And I think we'll talk about that in the next series is bridging the gaps, right? And mercy, are there some gaps, right? And some of them are hidden, you know, there are already bridges there. I'm not saying that, you know, we just got people missing the mark everywhere, but some of these bridges, it's time for maybe some re-engineering. And we're seeing that across the U.S. now, you know, the bridges across pretty much all of our states are being adapted to the needs of today. But I do think that partnership, that conjoining of education at all levels, skilled trades, and industry, that's a big one. And I really look forward to talking to you about that, Nate. Want to just wrap it up with saying thank you for being here. I look forward to having more of these conversations. It's going to be a great series. But this is a big one. And I do look forward. I know we're going to have some kind of wrap up virtual and hopefully on site opportunities for the podcast listeners and our respective network to join. And I look forward to virtual sessions. Of course, I look forward to face-to-face. I do miss that, you know, when things allow, you know, when things maybe settle down, we've got a lot going on right now. But again, Nate, thank you very much. Couldn't be happier with the way this discussion went. I hope our podcast listeners feel the same.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff, for having me. And I'm looking forward to it. I think there's, an awful lot to unpack here. And so, you know, we'll get to the business of unpacking it over these next several episodes.
Thank you for tuning in today. Don't forget to subscribe and review the show. And for more information on IPX, visit ipxhq.com.